session number 24609, reel 6.
And Captain Cooper were coming to the end of their tour of duty in Malaya and were destined to return to England. We were very sad to see them go, and we asked Captain Newlove, who was going to take over as commanding officer of our unit, and he said a Major Harvey would be coming to take over, and he more or less said that Major Harvey is going to be a little bit different to what I am. And he sort of smiled and winked, and we thought, I think we're in big trouble here. And sure enough, we were. When Major Harvey arrived at the camp, things began to change very, very rapidly, and it wasn't for the best either. We were all waiting with sort of bated breath for the arrival of this Major Harvey, and when he did come, he arrived in a jeep, and we didn't see much of him on the first day, but at that afternoon, coming towards the end of the day, Tug Wilson said to us, he said, "You better clean yourself up, get your uniforms all sorted out, and you'll be on parade at 8 o'clock in the morning." So we hadn't been on parade for over a year and a half. We hadn't had any kind of a parade or inspection or anything like that. And this was a real shock to us. But the following morning, we got dressed up the best we could and paraded on the little piece of ground that we had down outside the office. Major Harvey came out. He was not a very pleasant character to look at. He was rather a dour, miserable-looking person. He came out and he didn't bother to inspect us individually. He just looked at us and said, "You know, what a bunch, a shower, like, you know." So he said, "You've got 24 hours to get your uniforms in order and get your boots cleaned up and everything like this, and report back the next day." The next day, of course, we were all, our boots were highly polished and cap badges clean and stuff like this, you know, and we put on a bit of a show for him. But he was a very unpleasant character. Nobody could ever do anything to please him. Always had complaints about everything that happened. And we were not very well disposed towards staying at the unit any longer. We thought 221, we'd had our days there, and we wanted to get out. Anyway, we had the keys to the office, and we used to go down to the office and snoop around at night and see what we could find in the way of scandal. And we came across a request to headquarters that myself, Gabby Hayes, and Wizzy Wise, he wanted to get rid of us, and a notation at the bottom, "No replacements required." So in other words, he was giving us away for free. So we knew we were on the way out. A very short time later, our names came up on orders that we were being transferred out. Gabby Hayes was sent down to Singapore Island. He was attached on an LED to the Royal Corps signals, and the signals were in turn attached to the RAF at Changi Airfield. So he had a really good posting. Wizzy Wise, he was posted not too far away, about 20-25 miles away, and he was posted to an LED as well. Myself, I was sent down to General Headquarters in Singapore at Fort Canning, and I was attached to 75 Company RASC as an LAD. This was a transport company of the Service Corps. They had mostly staff cars and a few three-ton trucks and a few motorcycles, but most of the unit was staff cars. There was two Cadillacs that belonged to Lord Louis Mountbatten when he was out there. There was two Humber Pullmans that were used by the CNC, who was Sir Charles Keatley at the time, and his wife. And his Humber Pullman was painted khaki, and his wife was painted black. They were identical vehicles, but just different colors. And then there were Humber Snipes and Super Snipes, Hillman Minks, and the usual Austin PUs, motorcycles, which was usually the matchless G3s or G3Ls, and a few Norton 16H models, and the BSA M20 models. So this was where I was going to go. And I thought, well, being based in right in the heart of Singapore City, couldn't be all that bad. So I packed up my gear, and a truck took me down to my new unit, dropped me off at 75 Company LAD, and I took my kit bag and personal gear and waited outside the office to be interviewed by the CO, who happened to be Captain Craven. He had a big mass of white hair, and we used to call him Snowy Craven. So I was called into the office to be interviewed, and Snowy said, "Oh, come in, sit down, and if you want to smoke, you can smoke." You know, I didn't smoke at the time. And he said, "Well, tell me about yourself, you know." I said, "Well, I'm a vehicle mechanic too, and I know diesel and recovery and waterproofing and stuff like this." I gave him a list of my credentials. "Just the man I'm looking for," he says. He said, "From now on," he says, "you're a Lance Corporal," because Major Harvey had already busted me down to a craftsman, took my stripe away for being drunk and disorderly in Singapore and picked up by the military police and things like this. So anyway, so he said, "You're a Lance Corporal." So I said, "Well, just a minute, I think I'd better explain to you that my record hasn't been exactly top-notch." So he said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I don't have your records here," he said. "They haven't forwarded them on yet." So I told him, quite frankly, I said, "I've been in, you know, been down in Singapore, and we've been caught in the Outer Bounds area by the RAF police, and we've been charged and all this kind of thing, but Captain Newlove usually dismissed the charges anyway, but Major Harvey didn't, and Gabby, Lizzie, and myself were caught by the RAF police 2 weekends in a row. So Major Harvey busted Gabby and myself down to Craftsman again. So I told Snowy this in the interview, and he said, well, he said, I can tell you this, he said, I don't believe in a lot of this discipline kind of thing where, you know, a guy can't go out and enjoy himself at night and things like that. He says, I shrug it off and say, you know, this is boyish behavior kind of thing. So he said, you're a Lance Corporal from now on. So I walked out of there, and I was a Lance Corporal all over again. One of the first jobs that I had was, Snowy saw me, I think it was on the Monday morning, and he said, would you like to go back to your old unit on a trip? So I said, I sure would. I said, what would I have to do? He said, well, we've got a truck that's got to be taken up there. And if you drive the truck, I'll send somebody up in the car to bring you back. And you take this truck back to your old unit. So I said, oh, that'll be fine. So I jumped in this truck and I drove it back up through Singapore Island into Malaya and back to my old unit. As soon as I jumped out of the truck, I headed into the office and met the people that I left behind. The first person I saw was Major Harvey. I gave him a smart salute and said, good morning, sir. And I showed him my Lance Corporal stripe. And he turned kind of red and a furious look on his face and just stalked away and left me standing there. So I kind of had a bit of satisfaction out of doing that. So my life started at 75 Company LAD. I was assigned to take charge of the inspection detail. We had a trailer that was fitted out as an office. I had a young person there, I can't think of his name now. He was my sort of secretary. He used to do all the typing and stuff like that. My primary job was to make up a chart of all the vehicles in the unit. This is 75 Company RSC, and I had to make it a schedule to bring every vehicle in once a month for a 406 inspection. This involved going over the complete vehicle, checking the brakes, transmission, or any oil leaks or anything like that. The primary purpose, of course, was to keep them in good shape. I used to designate the CNC's cars, the Humber Pullmans and the Cadillacs, and there was one Buick, a 38 Buick, a straight 8 motor in it. I used to let the drivers of these vehicles come in and tell me what would be a good day for them to bring their vehicles in for inspection. And all the other vehicles, I would designate a day and a time for the vehicles to be brought in. And this was done on a regular basis. We used to look after, I guess, about 10 vehicles a day would come in. 10 or a dozen vehicles a day would be brought in. They would range from motorcycles, Austin PUs, Land Rovers, the standard car for officers in those days was the Vanguard. And then, of course, the more senior officers, they would get the Humber Snipes and Super Snipes right up to the C&C, and his wife with the Humber Pullman. The command secretary had the 1938 Buick. Two Cadillacs were destined to be scrapped. We also had two Jeeps that belonged to Lord Louis Mountbatten's staff. They were painted in a better fashion than most of the Jeeps. They were sort of custom painted, and a lot of the fittings and things like that were either chrome plated or painted to some high standard. So these two Jeeps were, the serial numbers were consecutive, and they belonged to Lord Louis Mountbatten. Not too long after I got to 75 Company, the news where it was put on the notice board that the Duchess of Kent is coming to Singapore to inspect the troops. Well, in their infinite wisdom, the military gods concerned decided that rather than her going around to 100 different camps on Singapore Island, she would inspect the troops in Ayer Rajah Road, which was a long road in Singapore that had military camps either side. There was the signals and the engineers, military, the REMI, the RESC, the Ordnance Corps, and all different kinds of camps were lined either side of this road. So they decided they get the personnel from these camps to line either side of the road, and she would drive down the middle. I can't remember how long the road was. It may have been a mile or so, maybe a couple miles, I don't know. But finally the news got to us, and Snowy Craven said, well, we've got to supply our men to line our portion of this road. Then there was a big scramble for the guys to find an excuse not to go on this parade. So myself and the guys I work with, we used to do a recovery duty at night or during the day. There was a phone number that anybody that had put their car or truck into a ditch could phone us, and we'd get a recovery vehicle and come out and look after them. So I went to Snowy and said, well, I'm on recovery duty that day, so I can't go out. And my assistant, who used to do the secretary work for me, he's my sort of helper. So Snowy said, well, okay, you and your helper can stay in the camp and man the phones. So everybody else went out on this parade. And basically what they did was they just lined either side of the road with troops, sort of shoulder to shoulder. And they were out there at 8 o'clock in the morning. And they stood around and stood around until she was supposed to drive down through in one of Louis Mountbatten's Jeeps to inspect the troops. She finally came down and drove down the road at 11 o'clock in the morning. And in the meantime, I got a phone call from a driver that he said he was driving an Austin car and that he put it in the ditch up at the, what we used to call the Gap, which was a hill about 3 or 4 miles from the camp. And could I come out and pull him out? So I got in the recovery vehicle, which was I think it was a Leyland Retriever, I'm not sure. And we headed out of the camp, and we got as far as the road, which of course was lined with troops. The military police were there, and all kinds of high-ranking officers. And they said, you can't go through here. The Duchess of Kent is expected any minute. So I said, well, I've got to get out to this vehicle, because there may be somebody injured, and I've got to get it out. So there was a big discussion amongst the officers and military police, and they said, well, how long will it take you to get down the road to the turnoff where you go up to the Gap? Oh, I said, it shouldn't take me more than 3 or 4 minutes. They said, well, okay, but hurry it up, because you'll be coming along soon. We got this Leyland Retriever moving, and we went up through the gears. And suddenly, up ahead, we saw headlights. The full width of the road, there was motorcycles, military police jeeps, a whole procession of vehicles coming towards us. So I said to my buddy, I said, you get on the running board of the truck, and you tell everybody that's lying on the side of the road to jump the other side of the ditch, because I'm going to come over as close as I can to the ditch without going in it. And I got 2 wheels off the side of the road and 2 wheels sticking out into the road, and this whole procession came towards us. The military police had to squeeze over on their motorcycles and go around us. And eventually, the tail end of the procession, there was military police there, and they they sort of dropped out of the parade and started coming towards us. So I said to my buddy, I said, hang on tight. I said, we're going to be moving. So we took off down the road, and the jeeps didn't bother to chase us. So we went down and we got this Austin car out of the ditch. We winched it out and put it on the back of the recovery vehicle and took it back to camp. As soon as we got inside the camp, Snowy Craven stood inside the gates and chewing his fingernails, and he said, that phone hasn't stopped ringing. They want to know who the guy was that was driving the recovery vehicle. He said, they want your head on a plate. So I wasn't too concerned. It didn't really bother me that much. I wasn't the kind of person that used to worry too much about repercussions. So anyway, the whole thing kind of blew over. They wanted me charged with obstruction or something. I don't know, but nothing came of it anyway. But this was one of the incidents that happened in 75 Company LAD. There was another incident that happened. We had a phone call one day around Fort Canning, which was the highly secured headquarters sitting on top of this hill in Singapore, which was the headquarters of the Far East Land Forces, that they had a big safe that they wanted to move from one office into another, and that could we help them? So Snowy said, well, what do you think? Could you tackle them? Dubs. And I said, well, I'll take a ride out there in a recovery vehicle, and we'll see what we can do. So we went to Fort Canning. To get in Fort Canning, you've got to go through a multitude of military police and guards, things like that, and security. So we get in there, and what the job was, there was a hill, and in tiers on the hill were rows of huts, administration huts, and there was one that went around the part of this hill, so many feet up this hill, and then 20 or 30 feet further up, there would be another row of huts at the next level. So what he basically wanted done was this big safe taken out of one of the huts, or one of these buildings, and it was a grass hill, and they wanted to take it down this hill and into the next row of buildings. So when we get to this location, there was a Marine officer there. I think he was a major, I'm not sure. And he said, okay, I'll take over from here in. So he said, what we'll do is he explained what he was going to do. And I said, well, we're experiencing this sort of thing, you know, winching and things like that. So we got the safe out of the one office, and we got it on the slope going down to the next office. And I said, well, the best thing to do would be to put a rope cradle around the safe, and put it on wooden slides, and let it slide down the hill on these wooden planks. So, good idea, and this is what we did. I started to tie a box sling around the safe, and this major from the Marines says, oh, stand by. He says, I'm a naval man. I know how to tie knots and all this sort of thing. So anyway, I said, well, okay. I said, I'll go and sit in the truck on the winch, and I'll watch the rear view mirror, and you just tell me when to pay out the winch. So he tied what he thought was a good knot, and he signaled that I was to slacken out the winch and run out the winch, let the safe slide down the hill. It only got a few feet, and the knot came undone, and